Welcome to Simple Sustainable Home. I'm Rachel, the blogger behind Milk Glass Home. My focus is all about making sustainable living easy and beautiful. We're going to slow down and learn about cooking from scratch, gardening and preserving the harvest, setting up a low-waste lifestyle, and keeping a non-toxic home. We have new episodes every Saturday to help you find new tips and strategies to make simple living easy. Let's get started. Hi there, everyone. This is Rachel. You're listening to Simple Sustainable Home, and I'm really excited about today's topic. We are talking about food preservation, and that is a passion topic of mine. It's something I think about and read about and write about and do a lot. And there's so many times when I'm making a project or something and I'm like, I just wish people knew how easy this was. Like, a lot of people feel drawn to preserving the harvest. They have this sense of like nostalgia about it where they're like, oh yeah, I remember my grandma used to do this, or, you know, this is something that I've aspired to do my whole life, but they feel so intimidated by it that they just don't start. And the sad thing about that is, you know, once it's inertia, right? It's harder to get you going. Like once you've done it and you realize how easy it is, then it's a lot easier to keep going. But until you take that first step, it feels almost impossible. So my goal today is to share just a handful of very, very simple food preservation techniques that you can use that are not canning. It's not about water bath canning or pressure canning. You don't have to worry about going out and buying a bunch of equipment and figuring out what pectin is and all of that. Although none of that's really that hard either. That's what I want to tell you is like most of this stuff is actually pretty easy. But I want to share with you a few things that you can do no matter where you live, whether you're in an apartment or on land. These are things that you can do anywhere to store the food that's fresh now for later. I promise you, they are mostly like one or two step recipes. There's so many times where I'm like, I can't make this a recipe. Like this is a one step task. But if people don't know how it works, then they need that information, right? So I'll write these blog posts and I'm like, I know it's just two things, but it's really important. So on my website, I have some food preservation projects, but I'm going to keep adding more to those. And today I'm just going to give you a brief overview of some strategies that you can try no matter where you are to have food that's grown and fresh right now available whenever you'd like it. Let's take a moment here and think about why would somebody even bother with food preservation when we could simply go to the grocery store and get preserved food inexpensively and very conveniently? Like, what's the point of this? Why would I even bother with this effort? And I think there's a few things to think about here. So first of all, I don't have a problem with food that's preserved at the store. You know, if you think about how canning companies work, they'll typically get produce as fresh as possible. So they only can during canning season. They're not getting out of season peas for the canned peas or the frozen peas. They're getting it as fresh as possible, and they're typically going to process it very, very quickly. So yeah, I mean, that's actually a pretty good system, right? Like there's nothing too bad about that. You know, it's more expensive if you buy organic, and you have to be careful about getting like BPA-free cans and avoiding plastic. But I don't have a problem with, you know, the frozen fruit industry or the canning industry. Like there's some cool things happening there. But I also feel like there's still a ton of food waste in the world. And because I spend so much time and money and energy growing my own food, I want to honor that effort and make sure that that food doesn't get wasted. Another thing is that I love supporting local farmers, and I always feel like homemade is best. I know that, you know, that puts pressure on people. I'm not saying that there's a problem with you buying strawberry jam at the store versus making it, like to each their own. But for me, I prefer to stock my pantry with things that I've canned during the summer and go back to those in the winter. And I mean, we just like canned stuff, but that's because I'm comfortable with canning and a lot of people are not. And for me, I grew up I don't totally understand where this like farm kitchen nostalgia comes from, but I do have it. I remember going into the basement at my grandparents' house when I was a kid, and I would see these shelves full of all of this stuff that my grandma had canned. And I remember thinking there was something special about it. Like, you made this? But why? Why did you make this? And how did you make this? Like, how did this older woman deal with all of these cans so that they would be safe on a shelf in the basement for a long time? And they all tasted really, really good. And when I'm canning or preserving in any way, I feel that connection to the past, where I think about all of the women in my family who came before, saving food for the winter, you know, preserving their harvest. And I feel like it's a little bit of an homage to them to keep those things going and say like, hey, I see you and I appreciate all that you did to keep people alive. And I can take a leaf out of your book too. Like if my grandma could do it without Google and without like all the modern conveniences, I can do it. It's not that hard. And the other part of it is that it's just really fun. Like I love kitchen projects and I really like to be creative in the kitchen and try different things and tinker around. And so many of these things are just so darn easy that you can't really mess up, you know? And that's kind of the fun thing is like you take a risk and you experiment and make this wild recipe that seems bizarre or whatever, and it actually works and it's really good. And you enjoy it and you want to eat it later. It's not, for me, it's not all about prepping. I know a lot of people are like, we can't trust the stores. We can't do this. You know, we have to make sure that we're in charge of our own food security. And I get that. And yes, you know, if things fall apart, it's really important to know how to preserve your own food. But I'm not operating from that lens. I try to operate from a lens of abundance and not about fear as much. So for me, it's not about, I'm scared of the state of the world and I need to have food in my pantry. It's more like this is an opportunity to turn delicious, fresh produce into something that is going to nourish my family, that we're going to enjoy eating into the year, you know, into the winter, throughout the seasons. Whether you are brand new to food preservation or you've been canning for years, I wanted to let you know about my home canning bundle. This is a bundle of different principles that I created to help myself prepare for canning season. Because I was really thinking about what I need to do to get ready for canning this year. And I was thinking, you know, I bet other people would benefit from these same sort of organizational tools so that they could make the most of their canning season and the things they've already canned as well. So there are 5 tools in this home canning bundle. And the first one is simply an inventory log to help you keep track of everything you made in previous seasons so that you can eat it before it goes bad. This is a great way to make sure you're not making too much of something this year if you still have a lot of something left over from the previous year. And then thinking about this coming season, you know, what tools and supplies do you need to have on hand? You know, do you have the right amount of jars and bands and lids and pectin? Do you have the jar lifter? Do you have all these little things? I created a simple checklist so that you can go through your pantry and your canning supply stash and make sure you have everything you need before you start canning. One of the other tools here is a recipe planner. This came from the fact that my husband and I were genuinely crushed when we finished the last jar of bread and butter pickles and we realized, yeah, we're gonna need a lot more of those this year. And so to be thoughtful about that, I wanted to create a place where I could track what ingredients I was gonna need specifically for that recipe so that I didn't get started and realize, oh my gosh, I'm out of mustard or whatever it is and have to run to the store. So you have the supply checklist, you have the recipe planner, you have the canning inventory log. And then I like to design things, so I made 2 different sized labels that you can print on sticker paper that you could put on any lid for your regular mouth or wide mouth jars to track what's inside. You could use that for not just canning, that could be for the salts or the sugars or any of the other things that you're making as well. It's really important to label your food so you know what's inside and when it was made. And this bundle has all 5 of those tools together. Because these are printables, once you buy this, you can print as many copies as you'd like. So this could really become the basis of a canning routine that you have for years and years. This canning bundle is on the shop at Milk Less Home. I will have a link to that in the show notes so that you can find it. But if you're really excited about food preservation this year and you want to get canning with me, you're going to really want to have that bundle. It's going to make things a lot easier. Let's start talking about one of my favorite and easiest strategies for food preservation. This is a great one for minimizing food waste, and that is making infused vinegars. So it's literally as simple as taking a store-bought vinegar and adding something to it to give it extra flavor. The vinegar, you know, vinegar is a wonderful way of preserving. That's how pickles can last so long. It's going to really keep that food safe. It's very acidic, right? It's an acid. So it's an excellent way to make things last a long time. And you can use these infused vinegars in salad dressings in so many different ways. So for example, let's say you are working with strawberries. Maybe you're making some strawberry jam that you're canning and you're taking all of those strawberry tops off and you don't know what to do with them. I mean, I've heard about people blending those up in smoothies, but I'm not there yet. So what I would do instead is take those strawberry tops, put them in a mason jar, and then fill the jar with white vinegar or whichever vinegar you prefer. White vinegar is kind of harsh, right? It's a pretty sharp vinegar. So you might want to try something like a white wine vinegar or rice vinegar. Those ones are really mild. And just allow it to sit for a couple of weeks. And all of a sudden, you have this delicious vinegar that has this aromatic scent. You know, it's going to take on some of the flavor and the aroma of whatever you've infused in it. Some people like to add chive blossoms. You can add all different kinds of things to vinegar to give it a nice aroma. And especially thinking about the strawberry tops example, you know, that would have been waste otherwise. So instead of composting it or throwing it in the trash, you're going to do something else with it to extend its life. This is a really great strategy. Anybody can try this. If you have food scraps, vinegar, and a jar, could be a leftover pasta jar or something like that. If you have any of those things, you can make an infused vinegar. It's really that simple. For the next tip, I'm going to cover two at once because I feel like they're so similar that it's okay to do this. And this is for making herb or infused salts and sugars. So if you follow me on Facebook or on the newsletter or on Instagram, you probably know that I recently made some lavender sugar with my four-year-old niece. And a lot of people were like, what do you even do with lavender sugar? Like, why would you even do that? All of these infused sugars or salts are just a way to add a little extra flavor. And so with this lavender sugar, you know, I can use that when I'm baking to add a really subtle lavender scent and flavor to scones or cookies or shortbread. I could use that as the base of a sugar scrub as well. But if you're using really high quality ingredients, like I use organic sugar and locally grown lavender, I didn't want to use that just for body care. You know, that's high enough quality that you want to eat that. That's really good stuff. So, It's very simple to prepare these things. So for example, with the lavender sugar, I'm going to use my food processor and I'm going to use my oven and that's it. Because I was starting with fresh lavender, you could use dried, and all I needed to do was blend up this fresh lavender with some sugar, put it on a baking tray to let it dry out a little bit so that if you want things to last for a long time, especially if it's something like a salt or a sugar, you don't always want to have moisture in there. It's going to make the salt and the sugar clump up. So what I like to do is dry those things out so I can make sure there's no bacteria growing and to allow those items to be a little bit easier to use, right? You don't want to go open a jar of salt and have it be totally clumped up. So for the lavender sugar, I just blended it up, baked it on the baking tray, and it's not even really baking. I shouldn't say that. You just put it at the lowest temperature your oven can go to. Mine goes down to 170 degrees. The sugar is a little bit, it's kind of fun to do because you can tell the sugar is done when it all clumps together. And I know I said we're doing this so it won't clump, and now it is clumping, but that's just what's going to happen here. So the sugar is going to clump together as the moisture dries out, and then we have to break down those clumps. So after I baked the sugar at this very low heat until it clumped up, I let it cool, and then I put it back in the food processor for just a couple of pulses until it was smooth again. And now I can have it in the jar in my pantry, and it's not going to clump up because it's already been processed. Very, very simple. I did the same thing to make my garlic salt, my green onion salt recipe. And I literally took the tops of my green onions. I blended those up a whole bunch in the food processor, added some salt, and then I baked that at that low heat in the oven until it dried out. And that really makes it so that I don't have to worry about, you know, is this going to be shelf stable? You know, I started with a raw product. Is this going to be safe or is it going to go bad? And salt is a wonderful, it's antibacterial, right? So it's naturally going to inhibit bacterial growth, but I still wanted to make sure it wasn't that raw green onion flavor. So I simply let this dry at that low oven temperature, and I had a really lovely light green salt that's so good to add on scrambled eggs and all other kinds of things. And I grow onions in my garden, so I always have green onions in the spring, and it's nice to have some way to get that spring flavor without having to go to the store and buy more spring onions. And if you already are used to using your oven for something like a lavender sugar or a green onion salt, you know, you can dry things in the oven like fresh herbs. You can use it like a dehydrator. And yes, those commercially made dehydrators are probably better. They can work at a lower temperature, and you do have to keep temperature in mind a little bit when you're drying. But at the end of the day, we just have to work with what we've got, right? And I'm not going to go buy an item that does one task when I know I can use my oven. So you can set that oven back at that very low temperature. You could even do this on the same day you do other projects. So if the oven's already on, you know, use it for two things. But for example, with those green onions, when I made my green onion salt, but I still had a ton of green onion tops. So I decided I was going to dry those out to make a green onion powder. And that looked like me just washing the green onions, drying them off, chopping them up, putting them on the tray, and allowing them to dry out naturally at that low oven temperature. For that one, I did crack the oven door open a little bit. And my trick for that is to just put a wooden spoon between the oven door and the top of the oven so that a little bit of heat can come out. That way it's not too hot in there. But all you're going to do to make sure it's ready, there's not like a temperature to check. If you pick up the green onion or whatever it is that you are drying, maybe it's parsley, maybe it's something else. If you pick it up and you rub it between your fingers and it crumbles into little pieces, it's done. So then you just let it cool and you put it in a jar. It's that simple. That's how you can take fresh herbs from your own garden and save those for later. But you also don't have to use the oven. You know, a lot of people will air dry herbs, especially by tying them into little bundles and then hanging them somewhere in their house to dry out. This is the sort of thing that our great, 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 great grandmas probably did to make sure they had fresh herbs to use throughout the year. That's one of the easiest preservation projects you could take on. And especially if you have a garden or even just a pot of herbs, you could be preserving those to use in your own recipes. All right, I have two more quick strategies for you. And I'm going to save my favorite one to the end because it's the easiest one. And it's one that anybody could try. But one last one I want to offer before that is to make a compound butter. So a compound butter is when you just take butter and you add other stuff to it. Yep, that's all it is. It's a flavored butter. So for that one, all you need is room temperature butter, and then you're going to add some sort of fresh herbs. Usually it's fresh herbs. So you could use fresh basil, fresh parsley. I made one over the weekend with garlic scapes. So garlic scapes are the flowering head of the garlic plant. And if you want a really nice garlic bulb, you need to pick those scapes. Otherwise, the plant's going to send all of its energy to the flower and not the bulb. And obviously in the garlic, we want a bulb for these delicious meals. So you pick off these garlic scapes, and then you have this item that you need to deal with. Like, you could either compost it. You know, that's adding to food waste. I mean, composting is a way of naturally breaking things down, but especially like garlic scapes, onion scapes, leek scapes, these are all things that are edible. And what's great is that they have that subtle garlic flavor. So it's kind of like free food. You know, garlic scapes are free food that the plant is providing you while you're waiting for the real harvest from that item. I did a few projects with garlic scapes, including doing some pickling, which pickling is probably one of my favorite beginning canning methods for people, just because with that vinegar content, they're pretty fail-proof. You know, like you're gonna have a really good, it's gonna be safe. The likelihood of there being problems is low because you're having such a high vinegar content. But one of the other things I did was I sauteed some garlic scapes, which just tastes kind of like garlicky green beans. And then I mixed those with sea salt and some fresh parsley from my garden with some butter. And then I rolled that butter in a piece of parchment paper into a log. I chilled it in the fridge, and now I have compound butter. I made a double batch of this, so I have some that I'm going to put in my freezer for later, and then I have some that I've been using for making like garlic bread, except with garlic scapes, which was really good. I've used it in scrambled eggs. You could use it to serve on top of baked potatoes. I mean, this sort of thing seems really next level, right? Like if you show up at somebody's house and they're like, "Oh yeah, I made this garlic scape compound butter just for your baked potato." It seems really extra. It seems, you know, oh my gosh, like that's too fancy, but this was a way that I preserved this food so it wouldn't go bad. So yes, it is fancy. Yeah, I would say, I mean, at a store, you pay a lot of money for compound butters. Like, I think that's a whole industry there, but you don't have to do that. If you have butter and you have herbs, you have compound butter. You just have to put them together. Plus, if you don't know that you can freeze butter yet, take that as your one tip of the day. You can freeze butter. It lasts really, really well in the freezer. Usually, you want to eat it within about 6 months to a year, but especially if you ever find a really good sale on butter. So, for example, butter usually goes on sale in the springtime when the cows go back to pasture, theoretically. You know, if this is a cow that gets to have a life on pasture, usually in the springtime, that's when they're going back. They're getting that fresh grass that has all of those nutrients. And that spring butter is actually supposed to be like the most nutritious butter of the year. So in the springtime, if I see organic pasture-raised butter on sale, I buy a whole bunch of it and I'll freeze it. And I'll usually try to have enough to get me through 6 months or so. But that's another great way to preserve things. I'm on a butter tangent now, and this is not the first butter tangent I've had in my life. So I'm going to stop at this point. But have that as your one tip. You can freeze butter. Also, springtime butter and spring cheeses are really special. Moving on. My final food preservation tip for you, and my favorite. This is the one I used when I had no energy to make anything else. I'm talking no vinegars, no infused sugars or salts or compound butters, no time or energy for anything else. You can still do this one. And I've done it for years, and it's just so stinking easy. There's like no excuses for it. It's just freezing. It is just freezing. That's it. So remember the berries, about how I've always had berries around. And you know, if you're growing berries and or raising or picking berries or foraging or whatever, you often end up with too many. And we know that berries don't last very long. So the very best way to preserve them, if you want to eat them whole or bake with them, or you know, honestly, even if you want to just like have them preserved now and then come back later to make jam when you have more time and energy, like the summer is a busy time. Especially if you're farming or gardening, you have kids, you have other things, you don't always have time to come home and deal with that produce right away. It's great to be able to push pause on those things so they're not going to go bad, but you still have them and you can use them again later. So for freezing, let's talk about freezing berries. I wrote a post about this years ago. All you really need to do, and this first step I didn't do for a long time. It's okay if you want to judge me. I never washed my berries forever. I was like, whatever, anything bad's gonna get killed in the freezer. Any bugs or whatever, I don't really care. Especially with things like blackberries and raspberries, you know, they have all those little nooks and crannies. I feel like it takes forever to like wash them and fully dry them. I do wash my berries now before I freeze them. But what you wanna do is just rinse everything off to get the pollen, the dust, whatever might be on those plants, and then dry them on kitchen towels until they're fully dry. That part's important. If the berries are not fully dry, they're going to stick to your sheet tray. And that's the tool we're going to use in the freezer to have them in a nice single layer surface. So you're going to take your dry berries. You're going to put them, I like to do this on parchment paper because then you can just lift up the parchment and use it as like a funnel to pour it into a bag. You could use silicone baking liners as well. That's a more sustainable option, but I do still have parchment paper on hand, and this is one of the few times that I do use it. So when your berries are dry, they're going to go in a single layer on the tray, and you're going to put it in the freezer. All we really need to do, we don't need to freeze it all the way through. We really just need to freeze the outside so that they don't get crushed when you put them in a container together. I will often just let them freeze for a few hours, or I'll do it overnight just because if it's like a exhausted evening after a farmer's market or something, I might not have energy to be babysitting all of those things, and it's not going to hurt them to be on the tray overnight, but you probably really only need to have them on the tray for about 30 minutes to an hour until that outside layer hardens. And then you can put your berries in whatever container you'd like. You can put them into mason jars to freeze, to keep them in the freezer. Some people aren't comfortable freezing glass. I totally understand that. You can put them into reused freezer bags. We always have plastic freezer bags around, and we just wash and reuse them. So we typically just do that. I did invest in some silicone bags this year, and I might try freezing into those. But it's hard to imagine having something so expensive just stuck in my freezer for months as I like slowly work through my blueberry stash. But that is a more sustainable option. There's lots of different ways to store your frozen berries when you're done. Some people do use those vacuum freezer bags. Only do that when your berries are fully frozen. If you don't, they're all going to get crushed together into one mass. That's another tip for you today. But these are all great strategies. And I find that for me, frozen berries tend to last really well for about a year. So you do want to try to use them within a year. If you've frozen them in an airtight way, like if you did a vacuum sealing bag, I've used berries that were frozen that way like 5 years later, and they were still good. Sure, they taste a little bit like freezer, but not that bad. And the great thing about this tip is it's not just berries. You can use the same strategy to freeze cherry tomatoes. I love to freeze cranberries. It's really nice to have them around for like fresh cranberry scones or things like that, even past cranberry season. There's other things you can do like this too. So I often will buy a case of cherries to pit and freeze. I love frozen cherries. In the past, I would get like a 25-pound case of typically peaches. And I would just cut them in half or cut them in quarters, and I'd freeze them on the tray. You know, this is just a really good strategy to use for a lot of fruit. And it's just so easy because, especially with something like blueberries, you're not cutting anything. You're just washing, drying, freezing, putting in a bag. You're doing nothing to the food other than just moving it and like getting it a little bit wet. You know, working with peaches or things like that, there's a little bit more work there. You've got to remove the pit and do some cutting. But this is a really, really easy way to take food that's fresh right now and preserve it for 6 months to a year. And so imagine that you started today with one of these recipes. Maybe you want to make a vinegar or a salt or a sugar or a compound butter, or you want to dry some herbs, or you want to freeze something. It seems like all of these things are just, oh, that's just nothing. That's just like a little bit here and there. But I promise you that if you keep coming back to these strategies and you try them again and again, a little bit here and a little bit there grows and becomes a totally different lifestyle. So I can look in my pantry now and I often don't notice all of the little things I make. And I have to tell myself, no, you need to pause. You need to realize, like the other day, I was eating peanut butter and jelly, and I was like, you need to pause because you made this bread from scratch, you made this jelly from scratch, and you made this peanut butter from scratch. And I had it packaged in a wax cloth wrap that I'd made by hand with beeswax and cloth. And I was like, this is next level. This is like as farm to table as it gets. all of this was prepared by your hands in these simple ways. And these were just baby steps. These were just little things. One recipe here, one recipe there, one recipe there. And all of a sudden, it turned into a whole meal. It turned into a whole lifestyle. It's amazing. Okay, my friends, I know that we covered a lot of different ideas and strategies here in this episode. And honestly, even as we're talking about it, I'm like, wait a second, I didn't talk about this and I didn't talk about that. And that's just because there's still so many simple preservation strategies out there that you could try. And I want to let you know that no, it's really not about where you are. You don't have to homestead. You don't have to garden. You can preserve things you buy at the grocery store. You can preserve, you know, the zucchini that your neighbor puts on your porch on National Put Zucchini on Your Neighbor's Porch Day. You can preserve all different kinds of food, and they really don't have to be very complex recipes. Again, there are so many times when I think this should not even be a recipe. This is too easy. But there's so many people who don't have this knowledge. This is knowledge that would normally be passed on generationally, but because it's just so easy to get things at the grocery store, we haven't really had to learn those lessons from our ancestors. And at this point, it's really helpful to go online and find tips and recipes and strategies. But I want to remind you that you are creative, you are capable, and you can do things like this. These are not hard. They might be hard at first because it's the first time, but I promise you, I made lavender sugar this weekend with a four-year-old. I showed her how to make the first batch, and then the second batch was pretty much on her. I just helped her with measuring and, you know, staying safe with the food processor and things like that. But she knew everything else to do. If this four-year-old child can make lavender sugar, so can you. And all I'm saying with that is these are just really, really simple strategies. It's usually putting one thing and another thing and calling it a day. So I encourage you, I want you to think about one project you want to do this year. Do you have herbs in your fridge that are starting to go bad? Let's think about maybe drying those in the oven or turning those into a compound butter. Do you have some berries from your backyard, or maybe berries are on sale at the store? Let's try washing, drying, and freezing some berries for later. Keep it as simple as possible, but this is not just a way to be creative and to have delicious food. I mean, those are the perks of this, but ultimately this is the sort of skill we need to minimize food waste, and we need to start thinking about the items that we have and caring for them. So if we have berries and we know they're going to go bad, let's try something to avoid that waste. We need to take care of the resources in front of us if we really want to live sustainable lives. That is my goal for you today. I really would love to know what project you're going to take on. If you do make something, which you definitely should, tag me in a photo on Instagram, tag Milk Glass Home. You can come hang out and share more information and pictures in my Facebook group called Simple Sustainable Home. And until next week, happy fermenting, happy preserving, have fun in the kitchen, and I'll see you later.